This program is brought to you by Fresh FM.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today I'm interviewing local author Geoffrey Waring about his latest novel, Deer Keeper. But before we talk to Geoffrey, I want to take a few moments to talk about freedom of speech. I'm the freedom of speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is a worldwide organisation that promotes literature and freedom of expression. PEN was the first worldwide association of authors and the first organisation to argue that freedom of speech and literature were inseparable. Have you ever read a book so beautiful it stops you in your tracks? That is the magic of literature. It is something writers aspire to. Being a writer is all about being able to let others see through you, to connect with your work, to imagine worlds and situations not like your own. Fiction, rather than being the poor sister of fact, is a powerful vehicle to allow us to connect with others. Last time I discussed Aaron Atterbeck, a poet, journalist and activist. Aaron Atterbeck has written several books inspired by spirituality, but since 2007 he's been in prison in Kazakhstan. While PEN represents writers imprisoned for their work, we also represent writers who are afraid to speak out for fear of the consequences. This is self-censorship. And research conducted by PEN America clearly suggests that freedom of expression is under threat from a creeping form of self-censorship. Censorship is the antithesis of creation. In 2012, past PEN president Salman Rushdie argued in The New Yorker, "No writer ever really wants to talk about censorship. Writers want to talk about creation, and censorship is anti-creation." Why don't we talk more about this topic? Refusing to talk about what we are refusing to write about is a worrying trend. In 1997, Arundhati Roy won the Booker Prize for her novel, The God of Small Things. It's a beautiful book of fiction with elaborate prose and an intricate weaving of events that keeps the reader in its spell until the end. It deals with a family in India that is torn apart by the laws that prohibit marriage between those of different castes. Her novel, a work of fiction, was the basis of a court case when a public interest petition was filed against her. The petition alleged that the novel was obscene and likely to corrupt or deprave the minds of readers in the way it dealt with laws around marriage. She went from being a Booker Prize winner to facing a grueling court trial. Arundhati Roy was not afraid to write about these issues, but in doing so, she was put through an ordeal few writers would welcome. Will others in her position stay clear of this topic? What about other topics that writers will avoid? According to PEN's report, Chilling Reads, we will never know what books or articles may have been written that would have shaped the world's thinking, because potential authors are afraid that their work would invite retribution. Stories are important. They are the glue that bind us. Without stories, we are mere disconnected cogs in a wheel. Reading is not a means of escape. It is a means of communication. This is just one story of one writer. If you want to find out more about what PEN does and how you can be involved, follow the links on the New Zealand Society of Authors website to PEN, or contact me, Dana Wensley, at pen@nzauthors.org.nz.
This show is sponsored by the Top of the South Writers, a branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors. Top of the South Writers is devoted to the interests of writers in the region. It offers talks, workshops, a weekly newsletter, advice about publishing and copyright issues, and much more. You can find out more about Top of the South Writers at topwriters.co.nz.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today, I'm interviewing local author Geoffrey Waring about his book, Deer Keeper. Aside from being an author, Geoffrey is a committee member on the Top of the South branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors. Like many writers, he's had a multitude of careers. He's flown anything from tiger moths to airline jets. He's been a pilot, an instructor, a seaman in the New Zealand and Norwegian merchant navies. He's lived in Johannesburg, Jeddah, Port Moresby, to name a few. And I'm very pleased to have him on the show. Geoffrey, thank you for coming along to the Nelson studio here at Fresh FM to talk with me today.
Well, thank you, Dana. It's very good to be here, and I hope the audience takes something from our conversation today.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Geoffrey, you've had such a varied life. Before we move on to talk about the story you've written, Dear Keeper, can you tell me a bit about your story?
Well, essentially, I was raised school days in Cambridge in the Waikato, and at 16 I basically ran away to sea and joined the Union Company in those days as a deck boy. A couple of years later, I went off on the Norwegian ships for 5 years, returned to New Zealand when I was about 24, and with the idea of taking my deck officer's tickets. But at that time, I looked at the industry and decided that aviation might be a better way to go, so I paved my way through flying and eventually became a commercial pilot.
I want to tell you that your writing came as a complete surprise to me. I've met you a few times before, previously, which I think we touched on a number of subjects, from the TPPA to the State of Israel and the Charlie Hebdo massacres. And from that, I thought your novel would be very politically charged. Instead, what I find is a work that contains incredible subtlety. It's a highly intelligent book by someone that clearly thinks through issues with determination and detail. The characters are not only believable, but they're allowed to be fully rounded. And I really enjoyed reading this book. I want to ask you how your life has informed your writing.
Some people who know me might say I have an overdeveloped sense of righteousness or social justice. And you'll probably find in Dear Keeper there's several layers or several threads there. And you'll see that I don't treat the banking industry very well at all. And the genesis of this whole book was the fact that the banks foreclosed on an orchard in Rewaka about 10 years ago. They had a large mortgage. It was up to date and they were paying it okay. And the bank suddenly decided there was more use for their capital elsewhere. So it said, the chap, we want the money by the end of the month. He didn't have it. They sold him out. He lost a lot of equity. And that was repeated on a very large dairy farm on the West Coast, where the owner and his family were actually physically removed by the police. And I thought, this is not on at all. And if you're in Dear Keeper, of course, it comes to a tragic conclusion. Dear Keeper really is a tragedy. It shows that faceless men in the business community can cause tragedy.
It's an interesting book because in Dear Keeper, the hunter becomes the hunted, doesn't he?
That's right. There is the hunter and the hunted theme running through the book. I am quite a keen deer stalker or hunter, and having farmed deer for 15 years, I thought that I'd introduce that to add a little bit of lyricism to the story rather than a straight discourse on bad banking.
So let's talk about setting. I found Dear Keeper reminiscent of some of Edward Rutherford's historical novels, such as Sarum and London, those sort of stories which span generations and touch on issues that shaped people and the culture of the time. How important was setting to you in this novel, and why did you decide to set it in the West Coast?
First, I think that there is a huge scope for stories in New Zealand. I think it's very much underrated by writers, and all my stories, nearly all of them, have been based in New Zealand. And the West Coast is a unique part of this country. It has a unique subculture. I did want to set the scene for the later tragedy by showing that the protagonist's forebears fought hard to build and live in a very hard part of the country. And then that was obviously, the protagonist could overcome the physical hardships, but he could not overcome the banking problems he had, and the tragedy resulted from there.
Mm-hmm. And that comes across very strongly in the novel. I really like how this historical part sets up what is the tragedy that happens later. So the book is called Dear Keeper because the protagonist, Hamish, turns from farming cattle to farming deer. But it's a story about a lot more than him. How did you decide to write it and to bring all the elements together? How did it evolve into the story it is?
Well, I can honestly say it wasn't planned that way. I saw that article in the paper about the orchardists being foreclosed on by the banks, and I thought, this is not on. So I thought I'd write a story. I'd write something about it. And it turns out I had a short story in the scene, if you read, you might remember, where the bank manager comes and is infatuated with the farmer's wife. Mm-hmm. Well, I had a short story about that, which I'd done as part of my creative writing course with NMIT. So I decided to use that as the anchor point for the story. And that evolved from that one scene, one short story, into a novel.
So I want to talk to you about characterization, because there are a lot of characters in this book, from a rather uptight town woman called Lydia Barrett to the salt-of-the-earth farmers and pioneers like Roderick McCorkendale, to policemen with a love of violent video games like Constable Quinton Crop, to lonely accountants who harbour crushes on a farmer's wife. A lot of characters, a lot of writers rather, find it difficult to get their mind in a few characters, but you seem to have got your mind in a whole town. Can you tell me about how you evolved that gift, or is it just a talent you've always had?
Well, when one is writing a stream of consciousness or thoughts of women from a man, I find it rather difficult. I must admit my wife had to read several of the chapters and offer some pointers to me. Essentially, though, the characterizations are based on people I've known, and I think that any writer understands that fiction is must be based on fact. Ultimately, it's based on fact. So I recall from my youth, for example, Lydia Barrett, the overdressed, rather severe woman of the 40s and 50s. And it's just a recall from people I've known, essentially.
You say in your bio that you now spend your days, and I quote, talking to animals for which you have an abiding affection. Now, this comes across in Deer Keeper. Each interaction with the deer in the novel is so carefully crafted. We actually experience things through the eyes of the deer at some stages, and you manage to pull this off, which is not an easy task for a writer. Do you want to tell us about that process?
It's imagination, a lot of it, of course, based on observation. And I admire deer tremendously. They are a beautiful animal. And of all animals I've farmed, they are the animal that most recognizes humans. I can take you into a paddock with 30 or 40 hinds in it. As soon as they see you, they'll up and run to the far corner. I can walk in the paddock by myself and walk past them. I won't even bother to stand up. So you can develop a relationship with deer. And when you spend 3 days in a deer shed putting 200 hinds through the deer shed, you become very close to them, and there's nothing else to do but talk to them.
So each show I ask my guests to choose a song they want to play. Tell us about the song you've selected and why you chose it.
Right. The song is by a woman called Miriam Makeba, and she was the face of anti-apartheid activity in South Africa in the 60s and 70s. She was known as Mama Africa. And the song is called A Luta Continua, which is Portuguese for the struggle goes on, effectively. And at the time, I was flying in Africa in those days as a flying instructor and charter pilot. The Portuguese abandoned, as it was, Mozambique. Lourenco Marx, the city there, which is now called Maputo. And this song is basically a song supporting the FEMLO movement, which is the liberation movement against the Portuguese colonial government at the time.
My people, open your eyes and answer the call of the drum. Freely, more freely, boom. Samora Mashe, Samora Mashe has come. Maputo, Maputo, home of the brave. praises to thee, husbands and wives, all thy children shall reap what you've sown. This continent is a home. My brothers and sisters, stand up and sing. Eduardo Montani is not gone. Fredimo, Fredimo, your eternal flame has shown us the light of dawn. Mozambique, a luta continua, continua. In
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today I'm talking to local writer Geoffrey Waring about his latest book, Deer Keeper. Geoffrey, that piece of music you played leads nicely into a discussion about what you're working on now. Tell us about your latest project.
It's a novel, as the pundits would have it, you're always right on what you know. Well, it's an aviation novel, which is not surprising, seeing I've spent 30 years in aviation, and it's more or less an ode to the Boeing 707, which is a fine early aircraft, jet aircraft that actually brought in the jet age. And based in Africa, where I lived and worked for some years, it's in a hypothetical African state with a rather Mickey Mouse freight operation, of which there were many in Africa in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And it entails the story. It's of two people, the chief pilot, who's a Scot from the slums of Glasgow, and a very young, naive first officer from Townsville in Australia. It covers a lot of what happened in those years with the breaking of the sanctions in South Africa, the nuclear issue with Israel, where the South Africans and the Israeli government were sharing nuclear materials and secrets and weapons at the time. Yes, it's a faction novel, if you'd like to look at it that way.
And when can we expect to see that in the shops?
I'm in the third draft now, and I've just put that up to the New Zealand Society of Authors Mentor Program. There's an assessment program for manuscripts, and if they select it, it will go to a very well-known New Zealand writer who will work with me, and we'll do a further edit on the manuscript before we take it to the publishers. Hopefully a publisher will accept it.
Mm-hmm. And do we have a title for it yet?
Yes, it's called Billy Boeing's Truck, and I can give you a bit of background to that. When I did my Boeing 707 training in the simulators in San Francisco, the instructor there was a retired Pan Am captain, and he said, "So guys, I guess you want to fly Billy Boeing's truck." So I said, "That's exactly what I'm here for." So that's where the name came from.
Geoffrey, I want to talk to you about Deer Keeper again for a moment. The title of the book is, of course, Deer Keeper, and the picture on the cover is of Hill's deer and a man in combat dress with a gun. I was expecting a very masculine book, the type of book we give dads at Father's Day, that sort of thing. But it's actually a book full of very strong, very well-written female characters. It's a book that reaches beyond traditional gender boundaries that categorise so much of today's publishing world. Let's talk about the characters some more. So characters like Araho Feeney and Judy McCorkendale, did you get help from your wife to shape them, or you just have a particular insight into the female mind?
No, I shaped the characters myself, but I then ran them past my wife to see if the what I'd written was acceptable or realistic. And I had no major objections from my wife, so I went ahead and left it into the left it in the manuscript.
I think that's remarkable. I really enjoyed reading those characters in particular, those strong female characters. The other thing about characterization is a lot of authors make villains bad. They don't make them flawed. They don't make them both good and bad. But your villains, there are a few villains in this piece, are not cardboard cutouts. They are fully developed characters. So Constable Quinton Cropp is one. He's very well written. How did you evolve him as a character, and what is he really like? What motivates him as a person?
Quinton Cropp is, as you've just indicated, a flawed man. His intentions are basically good, but his reactions to situations are not really acceptable. Quinton Cropp, you'll recall from the book, has trauma from his younger sister, who was attacked and badly beaten by in South Auckland. And he's carrying that with him, and it's expressed later on with violence towards his own towards his son, and opposition to Judy McCorkendale questioning him about child abuse. He's also a driven man in a lot of ways, and I'm sure there's enough policemen in this country who are in the same situation, but most have managed to control it.
Your bio says that you're indulging a long-repressed urge to write. So what writing courses have you done? How have you developed this craft?
I went to NMIT for 2 years as a part of a BA in creative writing. I also attended workshops with Owen Marshall and other top writers. Essentially, on that basis, I then bought a few books on techniques and followed it through. And I continue to write short stories and some poetry too, and that hones the novels, the novel techniques a little better. It makes it much more concise and tighter. Yes, the basis was NMIT courses, which gave me the nuts and bolts of how to write well, I hope.
And of course, a big part of writing well is being able to edit well as well, because there's so much that writers should cut and a lot of writers don't cut. And you can read that in their work. So do you want to tell us about the bits you cut, anything that you wrote and you thought, oh no, that just doesn't work, or I can't say that?
I'm laughing at that because the first draft of The Year Keeper was 171,000 words. It went to print at 114,000. And that's how much verbiage was in the manuscript. However, I have a liking for writers like D.H. Lawrence and Joseph Conrad, and they're rich and evocative writers. The modern style of novel is punchy, it's short, it's tension, and I think a lot of the atmosphere of and characterization is lost because it is so cryptic. In fact, a person who I respect, his knowledge on writing, I respect it a lot, said to me, I read the first draft of Deer Keeper and liked it. I've read the finished product when it was printed, and I thought it was truncated and overly short. And with critiques and assessments, you take the good parts and you do not take it all as gospel. In fact, I have a little extract here by Janet Frame, if I can find it. Janet Frame sent one of her books into publishing. The publisher said, this chapter is too short. The editor said it was too long. And in the end, she said, if a writer wants to be true to his craft, he must put his own moral sense out into the story rather than being dictated to by the requirements for commercialism or possibly even some literary fashion.
That's the hard bit about being a writer, isn't it? Using your ultimate judgment in the end.
That's right.
What's the best bit of advice you've been given about writing? We've only got a few minutes left, but is there one bit of advice that sticks out in your mind?
I would say keep your writing clear. A right word in the right place is far better than two or three sentences trying to describe a scene. You can do it and you can abbreviate it and make it much more concise and accurate.
Well, Geoffrey, I want to thank you so much for coming along today. I enjoyed your book and it was a pleasure to talk to you about your life and your work. We look forward to your new book with the intriguing title Billy Boeing's Truck. And thank you so much for being here. This is Dana Wensley and you've been listening to Top Writers. Today I have been talking to local writer Geoffrey Waring about his latest book, Deer Keeper. You can find out more about Geoffrey and about his books on the Top of the South Writers website at www.topwriters.co.nz or at Page and Blackmore Booksellers at www.pageandblackmore.co.nz.
This show is sponsored by the Top of the South Writers, a branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors. You can find out more about Top of the South Writers at topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Cheers, New Zealand On Air.